recording, man.
Yeah,
I
brother, like, dig it. Solid. Right on.
Welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. We got two more days of nice weather, I think.
Are you the one who runs the weather, Calvin? Holy moly.
No, I'm not.
I got this friend, guys, who runs the show. He runs the weather.
If you don't know by now, that's my co-host Sandy Williams. It's Friday. And I have to let you guys know, because before we came on the air, we were talking about Jack Benny, Bob Hope.
You're going to have to tell the listening audience who Jack Benny and Bob Hope are.
Do you think we have to tell the listening audience that, or do you think that we, I know we've got some folk amongst the
yes.
listening audience who
already know,
unfortunately, well, I yeah, shouldn't say unfortunately,
but,
no.
Of us who know about them only reluctantly admit it.
Well, you know? Bob Hope and Jack Benny bad enough, but you even brought in Gene Autry.
Yeah.
Gene Autry.
Well, the reason we talked about that is Gene Autry owned huge portions of the orange groves in Florida. We were talking about Florida being underwater.
Owning the huge portion of the orange groves.
Yeah, he was a mega millionaire. I think there was a brand of orange juice that he basically owned. I can't remember the name of it.
So long before there were billionaires, there were these mega millionaires. And,
right. And Gene Autry was one of them. He didn't make it packing a gun on movies.
Well, you know, I want to begin, Sandy, by talking about, and you know, it's not funny, Fort Lauderdale saw 2 feet of rain in a day. And
I will say that those of us who live in Wisconsin who aren't snow bunnies, who watch these people go off to Florida, and then there are the sorts of people who are Wisconsin residents their entire life until they make their fortune, and then they move to Florida so they can obtain the tax benefits of living in Florida.
Right.
No income tax, low sales tax, because they thrive on all these people who come in from outside the state.
And that great weather.
And so they move down there, snow bunnies, we call them, but these are like expat snow bunnies. And so, you know, a little part of me thinks, ha-ha, paradise isn't always paradise.
You know, Sandy, it's just an unbelievable event.
There is no climate change ongoing, in spite of the fact of all the evidence to the contrary, the fact that Fort Lauderdale got 25 inches of rain in 24 hours, that's just a normal tropical rain, you know?
But that doesn't even seem conceivable.
No.
That has to just be torrents of rain.
Well, plus the fact they get hurricanes all the time, and the highest place in Florida is like 500 feet above sea level, and that's kind of viewed as a mountain. And the rest of Florida is like within 10 or 15 feet of sea level, so yeah.
So there's so many people that I know who are continuing to head down to Florida. And you know, Sandy, if it's, you know, 10 degrees below zero that we are faced with in Wisconsin during the winter months and five months of winter weather.
Have you ever been in Sarasota in June? Because I have, because the boys I coach rowing have been good enough, and I'm happy enough to say they go to the national competition in Sarasota in June. June in Sarasota, is unbearably hot. Unbearably hot. It is walk slow hot. It's 95 degrees and humid, and it is
miserable.
Miserable. So, you know, all these people who transplant to Florida don't want to be there in the summer.
Well, see, and but they do call and let me know during the winter months.
Sure.
Oh, well, you know, and during the spring.
Hey. And during the summer, they come up to visit you.
You know, Sandy, you know, it was just last year that they had the major hurricanes that kind of wiped out part of Florida. And you know, and now all of this rain. I mean, so could it possibly be that at some point in time, Sandy, we don't know, maybe you and I won't be around, but Florida could eventually.
Well, the maps of the country, if the ocean level goes up as projected, based on the melt of all the glaciers and all of the Antarctic ice and Arctic ice, if it goes up as expected, by the start of the next century, Florida will look quite a bit different. It'll be a much smaller extension of the United States.
Let me ask you, Sandy, because people may ask, when people live in the paradise, they take the risk, and
there is some karma.
So should the government bail them out when these kinds of things happen? You know, because again, the government is, that's us.
Yeah.
And there's only so much money. And so when other states, you know, finally need to be bailed out, well, the money has already been spent in those paradise places.
Well, you know, look at New Orleans. New Orleans is, you know, sequentially just it's been on Hurricane Alley for decades, and it's been in ruins and been resurrected. I think I think the government shouldn't do things that financially, like setting up government insurance pools, because the insurance industry is too smart, understands that it's a risk not worth taking. I think in those circumstances, the government ought to maybe help transplant these people, you know, the people that need help to be transplanted from the place of danger to a safer horizon. But bailing them out and allowing them to continue living there is, and politically, that's been done in the past period. I have a great deal of trouble with it. The way we spend our money, I was thinking, actually, I was driving here. I drive here from north of Milwaukee, come down I-43. The project that goes from Capitol Drive to Mequon Road, north of Mequon, up to Saukville, I guess, in Milwaukee on I-43, has a price tag of, I think I heard, $700 million, okay? All of that is being done to add a lane on each side to this road so that it no longer will be a three-lane road that narrows down to two-lane. No, it'll be a three-lane road all the way up. And for some reason, in our triage of necessities, we've decided that it's worth spending almost $1 billion to do this project, when all it really is facilitating is the commute home for not just Tom, Dick, and Mary, but wealthy Tom, Dick, and Mary who live in the northern suburbs. And this has happened. When you look at the freeway projects generally, I don't know where the debate goes on about how we would spend these billions of dollars, but we should understand that money's being spent in all kinds of ways that might not reflect the actual welfare of us. It probably reflects the political interest of the road builders, of the highway, the people devoted to highway use, the truckers, for instance. It might relate to the voters in the parishes of Louisiana or in Florida. But I just keep seeing examples on top of our war chest, the way we spend money on defense.
You know, Sandy, I love having you on so much as you're willing to tell the truth about those things, because I've been on that road you were talking about that's being expanded.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
Well, it's an unfathomably huge project ongoing now. And you look at it, you can't even figure out what's going to happen. They eliminated, they used eminent domain to eliminate Port Washington Road for a couple of miles. And now they're building a new Port Washington Road, you know, 100 feet east of where it used to be so they can expand. It's a huge project.
But so that clearly federal dollars sanctioned by the senators of and Congress people.
I don't know where the, you know, probably this is probably part of the Infrastructure Act in terms of the funding of it. But how that infrastructure money gets spent is all handled kind of, I think, within the beltline of Washington, D.C., as well as the confines of – I mean, there was never a public debate about spending that level of money. And when I found out, my son is the one who alerted me to the fact that the price tag was way up there, and I looked it up, and sure enough, he was right. Like, really? That's our prioritization. Because the road did work the way it went.
Right.
there was a bit of a bottleneck when you got to this street called Good Hope Road, and it narrowed down. Okay, a little bit of a bottleneck. Okay, well, we're going to fix that.
And this is happening all over the nation because this is the infrastructure bill, right?
Yeah.
And I forgot how much money that infrastructure bill was.
Well, it was $1 trillion.
Yeah.
So I mean, this money is spilling out in every project. But the thing is that when you're going to do quick employment like that, you end up doing it's construction workers that get quickly employed.
And the worst part about that, Sandy, that I found is instead of them hiring a lot of new people, it's kind of the same companies.
Oh, yeah.
That are working on different sections.
Well, it is the same companies, and they probably staffed up, but they're also using overtime. And,
right.
And the people who were working are working long hours, making lots of money. But it's also essentially one type of worker, right? So they're not employing textile workers. They're employing construction workers.
Yes.
And it's not tradesmen per se other than concrete workers.
And then it takes so long because they're working on a project over here and they move some there. And then tomorrow they're at a different project somewhere else. Instead of finishing one, they're jumping around from place to place to place. And if you're in that business, bravo, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We got some stuff to get into. It's Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Show as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I was, you know, preparing for today's show, and I ran across this article, and it says there's a credit crunch all across the country, and then it went on to say here's why, and then this one paragraph. Hear that. It's the sign of credit crunching all across America. Okay, if not crunching, maybe squeezing or tightening or whatever. Euphemistic verb you might choose to communicate. That's basically it. It's gotten more difficult to borrow lately. Why?
Well, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago, we were talking about the bank scare, the Silicon Valley bank scare. And so, you know, the banks, it was revealed that a number of banks across the country had maybe done the same foolish thing that Silicon Valley Bank did, which was to have their capital account invested in treasury bonds that were, you know, maybe several years in maturity, 5 or 10 years in maturity. When interest rates went up, the value of those things went down. They had to announce the fact that they were getting short on capital. A couple of banks collapsed, or near Silicon Valley collapses, Signature Bank, had to be reorganized and acquired. And so there became this concern about whether banks were a safe place to keep deposits that were in excess of the FDIC insured amount. And so there has been a general tendency for people to move some money out of banks. So deposits in banks, particularly regional banks, have gone down. And when deposits go down, the money that's available by a bank to lend money goes down as well. So the banks have had to restrict the amount of money they lend because their deposit account has gone down, and their deposit account is the source of the money they have to lend. And so there's a credit tightening ongoing across the country by a whole bunch of banks. And many other banks have decided to be more conservative about their lending practices in order to make sure that their credit isn't threatened. All of this is part of the fact that banking is based entirely on the confidence of the public in banks. If you don't trust a bank, it can't succeed.
So Sandy, so companies that need to borrow capital...
Well, yeah, that companies that need to borrow money to use for the capital account to build things, to invest in things, are having more trouble borrowing. The price of borrowing has gone up. The availability of that money has gone down. That's the pathway that was described, and I think I mentioned it as well, the pathway from the bank scare of a couple of weeks ago to recession. This is the pathway to that, because with the credit tightening and the withdrawal of money from the credit market, it makes it harder for businesses to thrive, and businesses have to pull in their horns as well. So when the general economy has people pulling in their horns, what an interesting word, pulling in your horns. But anyway, if that's happening in the general economy, that's a recession.
Well, you know, we're headed towards something. Federal Reserve show that commercial bank lending fell over $100 billion in 2 weeks ending March 29th. That is the largest two-week cutback in overall bank lending in dollar terms in records going back half a century. Sandy.
Yeah. It could be a big deal. Although, you know, you look at all the numbers, and the numbers still say, oh, you know, our economy seems fragile, but... we're not in recession yet. You know, now the interest rate, the wholesale price index went down, so that suggests that maybe inflation has crested and is going down. So that means that the Fed might not raise interest rates the next time around, because there's actual evidence. If they don't raise interest rates, you know, maybe all of this will revive. You know, I think so far we've been participating in something that I would describe as a tenuous and fragile safe landing, soft landing.
You know, Sandy, when you, again, the largest two-week decline in bank lending in history.
Yeah.
That tells you something.
No, that's a big deal. And you know, the fragility of our financial system is apparent and becomes apparent periodically. It became very apparent in 2008. And this, you know, happily, this bank failure thing seemed to be contained pretty rapidly with Silicon Valley and the rest of it. Now banks are all taking remedial steps themselves, but those remedial steps are involving this withdrawal of credit.
Yeah. You know, it's not like people have been wishing for a recession. I mean, it almost appears like people have been saying, well, it's going to come. It's coming. It's coming. There's going to be a recession.
I was thinking an odd, you know, there's these good news, bad news jokes.
Right.
And this person goes to the doctor and says, doctor, gosh, I'm terrified. I think I might have brain cancer. And the doctor comes back a little later and says, Jack, I've got good news and bad news. He says, what's the good news? And he said, what's the good news? He said, you're not a hypochondriac.
Right.
So I just made that joke up. But that's kind of the way that we've all been thinking. We're on the, you know, we're on the verge of a recession. We're on the verge of a recession. Maybe some days the economist is going to come in the room and say, you know, I've got some good news for you. You aren't a pessimist.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
I went out it, even if I could, I can't have it.
You think that's the Dominion trial?
Sandy, do you know who this is?
You know, if you give me a minute, my brain will sort through.
But you've heard it.
Oh, God, yes. Who is it?
Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I remember the first time I heard Creedence Clearwater Revival, I was in high school. I think I might have been in about the 10th grade. And there was something about them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were upbeat, man, and the voices, really strong voices, and all of it. So when I was going through what I was going to have played today, it's weird, man. Creedence Clearwater Revival came to mind.
Just popped up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hadn't heard them in, man, a long time. But anyway. Speaking of revivals, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, you wanted to say before
we were talking about potential recession, right. And issues. There are a couple of soft spots. Particularly soft spot is commercial real estate.
Right.
Commercial real estate was already in the throes of trying to figure out what it was and how it was constituted after the pandemic. Virtual work became vogue. You know, even today, after the pandemic is more or less passed, we have it. It's very commonplace for most offices to require 3 days in the office and 2 days at home. If that's the case, they only really need about 3/5 of the office space that they used to have, and almost every big employer is trying to figure out how to scale back the real estate they use. And even in right here in Milwaukee, we have the circumstance of Northwestern Mutual builds a brand new tower. Pandemic comes along, they don't even fill up the tower with people. Now they're moving all the people they have in Franklin downtown to consolidate. They're actually shrinking the office space they use by a considerable volume, because they're simply revamping an existing office to move everyone into it, and they're closing down all of the Franklin operations. That's happening to real estate across the country. So commercial real estate shrinking, and now we've got a situation in which commercial lenders in particular are shrinking the amount of money they're willing to lend, and I assure you that the sector that they're going to be least willing to lend to is commercial real estate because of the risks inherent in it. So, you know, we are beginning to get more of the stars and planets lining up in something that could lead to a recession. However, the stock market goes up. Now the stock market can run contrary to recession. The fact that there is continuing worry is reflected by the price of gold. The price of gold is approaching a record. Gold is usually used as what we call a hedge. It's a way to sort of protect yourself against the risk of high inflation. It's also used to protect against the risk of recession. And so people seem to be migrating money into gold. What I think is happening is they're keeping money in the stock market, and they're putting other money into gold as the hedge against what could happen in the stock market.
Sandy, you said before we go to the phone lines that the stock market runs contrary to recession.
It can. Okay. It can.
But the Great Recession of 2008, it didn't.
It collapsed. Well, right. But that's because there was a terror ongoing as to whether the economic system. I mean, it was almost like the Great Depression, kind of a fear that we had a systemic problem. At the beginning of recession, at least, usually the stock market does decline. And it tends to precede the recovery by going up earlier than the recovery is actually experienced, based on just the shift in optimism associated with the people participating in the stock market.
All right, let's go to the phone lines and CJ. CJ, good morning.
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Thanks for taking my call. I really wanted to talk to you about the Pentagon leaks.
Go ahead. Well, we're going to get to that. Listen, we'll get to that. So if that's what you want to talk about, just hang on. Call back.
No, I'll take you up on this because this is easy. The mere fact that Sandy sits back and pretends like he's shocked when the Democrats and the president was warned exactly what was coming is a joke. And the mere
wait, Sandy sits back.
You know what?
You know, I don't quite understand. Sandy sits back. I take umbrage at that, CJ. CJ,
tell it how you want.
Well,
you can explain it how you want, Sandy.
I haven't explained anything. We haven't talked about it, CJ. We haven't talked about it. Call back.
Your party was warned. It's happening. We're safer and more prosperous under Republicans. And this president
okay.
is a joke.
All right, CJ, thank you very much for the call. Okay. So anyway, let's go here, Sandy, because I where was it? I was going to go and talk about something that Well, while I'm trying to find this, Sandy, he kind of threw me for a loop.
I couldn't figure out. I guess he was talking about the economy then. He wasn't talking about the leak. I wasn't sure. I guess I lost track of CJ's point.
Well, where is it at? We'll get into right here. Okay, so Sandy. This is in the Hill this morning, and you and I have been just hammering away, sometimes ad nauseum, I think, trying to point out to people the amount of money that we keep spending in the military, in the Pentagon's budget, over and over and over. We've been hammering away that there's something wrong with this, right? And that we need to do something to make the American people aware of the amount of money that's being spent. And so as I was going through things, war with China isn't inevitable. The Pentagon's budget says otherwise. So let me read a quick paragraph to this article, and then, Sandy, I'd love to hear your views on it. And a listening audience, a doozy combination of threat, inflation, and issues. Conflation is driving a steady drumbeat to war with China. We've been talking about this over and over again, and that the rhetoric is becoming policy faster than anyone can even ask the most basic questions. The foreign policy establishment, including senior U.S. military leadership and influential members of Congress, appears to have accepted war with China as a foregone conclusion, and their decisions on the federal government's budget reflect that assumption. By contrary to Washington's consensus, there is little reason to believe that war between our two countries is imminent. The reality is that China's military posture is defensive, and the threat it poses to the U.S. has been greatly inflated. The People's Liberation Army, Navy, does not have the capabilities to project power beyond its immediate vicinity. On the other hand, the existing colossal footprint of the U.S. military in the Pacific already serves as a strong deterrent and then some. Sandy, is this person on point?
I think it's on point. What is the periodical that's...
It's from... where is it at?
Well, to be honest with you, I would find that person directly, completely on point. The fact that it calls it the People's Liberation suggests to me that it might be something that other people would describe as a propaganda rag. But, you know, sometimes the other side's propaganda is pretty close to factual. And my sense is that, number one, China has more or less a defensive posture with respect to its expenditures. Quite the contrary, the U.S. expenditures, because we really don't ever conceive of ourselves fighting on the shores of America, almost all of our weaponry is offensive, okay? So the rest of the world looks at our huge stockpile of weapons a little bit differently, because We would describe it as defensive because I guess we say we're out there protecting democracies around the world, but the way we project that is all offensive, right? We have aircraft carriers. That's an that's by definition offensive weapon. And furthermore, what I've been talking about for months now is how do we make our foreign policy? How do we decide who our enemies are? When do we decide that and why? And what are the ramifications of it? And the ramifications of deciding that China's an enemy and beginning to plan our military around the prospect of going to war directly with China has huge financial implications in America, huge. I mean, it isn't just a rah-rah question of who's our next game against and how do we train for it. No, the way we make these decisions have huge ramifications for the U.S. budget, and the money that we spend on our defense budget is money we can't spend on Tom, Dick, and Mary.
You know, Sandy, none of these facts seem to matter in this year's budget process, though, which is shaping up to be a sensational military spending spree. President Biden's 2024 budget calls for an absurd $886 billion in military spending, 52% of the government's annual discretionary spending, and in recent history stays the course, and if recent history stays the course, the actual budget passed by Congress
will be bigger,
even higher.
Yeah, last time the I think he asked for 512 and he got 812 and he got 842 from the. So I mean, the prospect is that our Congress is so gung ho about all this based on all the private interest pressure they get that it'll go up.
All the while, defense contractors raking in massive profits. So I was reading something the other day, Sandy. And I forgot where it was, and it was talking about we are still flying World War II some jets, and even though we still have them,
Korean War, I'll bet, because I don't think we had too many jets.
Korean War,
yeah,
and we still have them. They're still a part of what we are using, and even though they're outdated, they won't be shut down, and you know why? Because the congressperson where those places...
The air base where they sit. Yeah, of course.
Yes, and so even though they're outdated,
mm-hmm.
he's not going to make that call. He's going to protect that. And you multiply that, Sandy, throughout all the rest of these people. And that's why we can't get this thing brought into orders. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, that's what Eisenhower was talking about when he talked about the military-industrial complex. When you've got factories who are either the original equipment manufacturers of weapons or the people who supply them, Oshkosh Truck, right here in Wisconsin.
Right.
This is primarily a military contracting company, very big, employs lots of people. I guarantee you that whoever is the congressman from Oshkosh is very interested in making sure that Oshkosh Truck gets plenty of contracts, if only because the voters, the workers there, it matter. So, I mean, this converts into not only the interest of the corporations, but the interest of all the workers who are involved in this industry.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Down on the corner, out in the street.
Us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. And you know, we have to talk about this, and we're gonna use this segment also to talk about the military spending, the military budget, because it is outrageous. And the fact that these tax dollars, that they're your and my tax dollars, and they are going to make sure that different towns and others, that those people continue to work. And so the politicians certainly have their grubby fingers all over this. And so you can't ever cut the military spending because of those things. And I'll tell you, Sandy, as a person who worked in industry and watched our jobs leave, it to me is discouraging that you say, well, these people, we got to make sure they stay here. It doesn't matter whether they're needed or not, but we're going to make sure they don't lose jobs. Let me say this before you respond. Service branches and combatant, the military threat from China is the main justification. And we talked about this months ago, Sandy, with you about Ukraine and sending all of the weapons that we were sending. They had to be replaced. Remember, we had a conversation about that? Justification cited by both the White House and the Department of Defense for the astronomical budget request. But already the GOP is doubling down on threat inflation and calling this historically high budget inadequate, to counter China. Since branches and combatant commands are also getting in on the act through their unfunded priorities list or wish list to Congress, their wish lists are routinely used by hawks in Congress to add even more expending to the already bloated military budget. Indo-Pacific Command has come out with $3.4 billion ask, while the U.S. Navy has requested $12 billion. Now, Sandy, is it?
Of course, you look at that. We're talking, this is a little bit like the huge number. We are giving Ukraine $120 billion of some kind of aid. Turns out that only about 20 or 22 billion in military.
You're right.
There's 80. So now we've got an $880 billion budget, and we're talking about peanuts. $10 billion here and $4 billion there. I mean, like, come on. There's that much. You can't find slush in that account to cover that kind of expenditure. Here's my feeling. At the end of World War II, we had our entire country on a war footing. Everyone who manufactured anything was manufacturing stuff that was in support of the war. And we went through a very significant effort to demilitarize our manufacturing processes and to turn it back into civilian manufacturing. We need to do that with our defense establishment. Now, we have too many people employed in jobs that are dependent upon an almost $1 trillion federal. Look at $1 trillion. Yeah. You look at the multiplier effect of that in our economy, and you realize how many jobs in our economy must be related to our defense budget, which is part of the reason why the defense budget is a political third rail. Don't touch it. In fact, not only don't touch it, but make it grow, because you can magically create jobs, or you can magically create prosperity in parts of our in congressional districts all across our country with these kind of defense expenditures. We have to figure out a way to pull out of this, wean ourselves from this, because if we don't, we're going to continually have foreign policies that finds boogeymen that support this kind of expenditures. The notion that we have to spend that kind of money to offset the Chinese military strength when China spends a fraction of this amount of money to create the threat that we're describing, that we have to spend almost $1 trillion to defend against or to fight against. I mean, we should just stand back, look at this. Let's, like that Australian, you know, why do I think this way? Because I have a brain and I think, you know, why don't we think?
You know, Sandy, I had a friend tell me yesterday, he likes the show because we bring information to our audience that they may not know. We do give opinion, but it's important because the information we're bringing is the truth. This is what the guy told me yesterday. And this conversation we're having right now, Sandy, it's the truth. So if it is, and it is, and we see that this keeps going on, and the American people aren't aware of it, well, at some point in time, the more we hammer away at it, you know, at some point in time, the people are going to have to say, hey, enough of this already, right? We know that this is taking away and affecting our lives, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Our lives are being impacted and affected by this.
Well, over half
our futures?
Over half of the discretionary dollars in our budget are spent this way, you know, a way that doesn't, other than
doesn't benefit us.
Other than employing the people who are employed in these jobs at places like, and I don't mean to vilify Oshkosh Truck, but to it's the place that I understand better because
right,
it's close
here,
by.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, we were just reading in the paper yesterday all these Oshkosh Truck military vehicles that were being unloaded in Ukraine, you know?
Yes.
And so we need to wean ourselves from having all these jobs dependent on that so we can relieve some of the political pressure that is, and the political dynamite that is held by the military and by the Pentagon.
But Sandy, the only way that can happen is through pressure from the voters, right, and the taxpayers. Isn't that the only way that that can happen?
Well, I think so. I think if we had a wise leadership, they'd be, you know, we try to talk about how we need to transition coal mine workers away from their coal mine jobs. We need to transition more and more people away from their defense budget-dependent jobs into other jobs. I was kind of embarrassed to find out. I talked to my stockbroker about my retirement account, and he said, you did pretty well last year because we were well invested. We were invested in some defense industry businesses, and they did really well.
Right.
And, guilt struck me at the moment. I didn't tell him to sell. I probably should have, you know, from the way I think. But the fact is that this industry is essentially cyclical. It does well independent from the world economy because look at what we're doing. We're increasing our military budget to nearly $900 billion, probably over $900 billion before Congress gets done with it and the hidden things. And we're doing that in a time of potential recession.
You know, Sandy, in the last thing on this is, before we go to break, is even though there are a lot of people whose jobs are tied into that, there are many more people whose jobs aren't, who are suffering because of it. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back. You know, Sam.
Now I'm fine. Checking trouble to hair move.